Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. We'll take a closer look at the best five lineup, some adjustments Miami could make, and an emotional plea to the Boston Celtics on this Monday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global, but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Hi there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter. Thank you for downloading the show and making it part of your daily routine. This is a Monday through Friday podcast with the occasional Sunday mixed in, depending on these playoff games that are on the weekends. Throw a post-game pod up there for you. But typically, it's a Monday through Friday podcast. So if you are a new listener, welcome aboard. Hope you enjoy the show. Please subscribe to get this directly to your device every workday, and you can follow on Spotify as well. All of you regular listeners, thank you for subscribing, giving the good written reviews, five-star ratings, all that stuff. This has been one of the best stretches for the podcast. We've been setting listenership records for a while, so really, I do thank you very much. Today's show, three segments as usual. Some random thoughts here in that are left over. A closer look at the impact of Hayward. Things that they might need to do to limit Adebayo at the rim. And how they can get away with Enes Kanter minutes. Segment two, a closer look at that best five lineup. And what worked, what Miami can do. Segment three, I'm going to take off the analytical hat. I'm going to put on the emotional hat. And give the Celtics an emotional plea directly for Celtics fans. That's in segment three. Let's start here, though. I think when I'm looking back at the game, I don't think, stress enough in my post-game podcast, which was done at like 2:30 in the morning. It was ridiculous. How important stopping Goran Dragic was in game three. I mean, he really, in games one and two, had such a huge impact. 11 of 19 from the field in game one, 10 of 19 from the field in game two. So much of those are attacking. So much of those are coming in the middle of the lane, the short mid-range or at the rim. He made such a huge impact. And in game three, the Celtics did a great job limiting him. 2 of 10 there. He still had 5 assists, but they still did a great job of keeping him from collapsing everything in Miami, playing off of what he was doing. And obviously, a lot of talk today is about Marcus Smart on him, but I think the Celtics did a good job in general switching when Kemba Walker had a shot at him. He did a great job staying in front. Very, very important. Just do not let him get to the rim. Stay in front of him. And the Celtics did a really good job of that. And obviously, that's going to have to continue. Miami is going to try to find a way to spring Dragic because he's the guy that really, if the three-point shooting goes off, okay. If Jimmy Butler goes off, okay. But if those things are happening and Dragic is going off, forget it. Then if you can survive as the Celtics, you can survive with some of the other things happening. You can't survive if Dragic is getting to the rim and also being awesome. And so that is a priority. We saw it be a priority. Marcus Smart on him is a great way to limit him as much as possible. But again, the Celtics did a good job switching and staying vertical and staying in front of him. So that's going to have to continue. I looked at a little bit of the impact of Gordon Hayward, and it basically was a lot of the same things that we had seen. But I saw a curious thing that they brought in Kelly Olynyk, and playing some of Kelly Olynyk and Adebayo together, I'm really curious as to why Miami did this. And I'm wondering if the Celtics are going to try to exploit Kelly Olynyk. If Spoelstra puts Kelly Olynyk in because Hayward's on the floor and they need more space, and they need another guy that can shoot over the top of a taller defender, I wonder if they can attack him defensively. I know he's good positionally. I just wonder if there's a way that they can exploit that matchup. And it's an interesting decision. They don't usually play Olynyk and Adebayo together. So I want to see what the Celtics do. That's an adjustment that I want to watch. If Hayward comes in and they play Adebayo and Olynyk together, does Stevens do something different? Does Stevens, I don't know if he goes to Enes Kanter quite yet, but maybe a Robert Williams addition to the lineup and force Olynyk to try to defend, or Adebayo to try to defend that, and then Olynyk has to run around on the perimeter to chase one of the three-point shooters. I think with Olynyk and Adebayo together in the game, or as Mark Jackson calls him, Adebato, but with Olynyk and Adebayo together in the game, I wonder if a rolling threat to the rim is going to help the perimeter, because if you take the Celtics have been planting Daniel Theis out on the three-point line to get Adebayo out of the lane. What if they bring in that rolling threat and he becomes Adebayo and the rest of the defense gets sucked in and Olynyk has to chase around the perimeter? Who does he guard? Depending on what the personnel is, but is it Hayward? Is it Tatum? Is it Brown? Like, I feel like he's not quick enough. Positionally, he does okay, but he's not quick enough to guard any of those guys one-on-one. So I'm looking at when Hayward comes in, if Spoelstra puts that duo out there of Olynyk and Adebayo together again, what does Brad do? Does Robert Williams play a role? He hasn't played a role because he hasn't been trusted. He came in game one. He bit on an up fake that let an Adebayo dunk happen. He just a little out of position. And you can't make mistakes against this Miami team. That's why Robert Williams hasn't played. But situationally, because we saw them play 9 minutes of Wanamaker, 9 minutes here, there, whatever, whomever, 5 minutes of Robert Williams in that lineup could be enough to put pressure on them defensively that causes some breakdowns and gets the Celtics some easy buckets or some clean looks at three-pointers. So I'm watching for that. Also, obviously, when we started the series, I was thinking if the Celtics can turn Bam Adebayo into trying to be a primary scorer, then that would be to their benefit. But Adebayo has been scoring by getting alley-oops and dunks and all of that. They have to find a way to limit Adebayo at the rim. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the second segment when I look at the best five lineup. But the Celtics have not been able to cover that pick and roll. And they've made a decision to stay closer to home on three-pointers. And maybe they're just going to live with Adebayo roles and just hope that the drop coverage, if they're playing drop with Tyson there, works. Or if the guard can, if they can switch. But the Celtics generally help really well. No one on the weak side has come over to tag him. And I just wonder if they're just afraid of that three-pointer, because we saw Jaylen Brown sticking very close to Duncan Robinson, and with Duncan Robinson over on the weak side because they didn't want that swing pass. I personally think you challenge your defense to play the way it's played and hope that Jaylen Brown is, a 23 super athletic guy, can get from one place to the other and read it and recognize what's happening, all you've got to do is be disruptive on the roll. So I just kind of want to see how they play those pick and rolls. That's an adjustment that the Celtics defensively have to look at. They've just been letting Adebayo run free to the rim, and you just can't have that. You gotta disrupt his pace to the rim, and maybe a couple of those alley-oops are tougher. They fly out of bounds, something. You got to just disrupt his pace to the rim. And the last thing here I want to touch on is, how long can they get away with Enes Kanter minutes? They did an interesting thing. If Bam Adebayo is not in the game and there's no real pick and roll threat, they can get away with some Enes Kanter minutes. And they hid him defensively on Andre Iguodala, which was really interesting. And I think that's a nice decision. It's going to be interesting to see how they play this, how Miami plays this. Do they bait the Celtics into bringing Kanter in the game and then make a different substitution once he comes in? I don't know. Obviously, Iguodala is not a huge offensive threat, especially not now. Having Kanter on Iguodala as a way to avoid him being in the pick and roll, you're not going to run a pick and roll with Iguodala. Or you can just say, hey, we're going to run it with him anyway. I would say the Celtics just blitz that, and instead of having Kanter drop, just step up and blitz it and see if that works. But how long they can get away with Kanter minutes without Adebayo on the floor could be another way for the Celtics to punish them on the offensive side. So that's something that I'm watching for too, because they can't get away with Kanter minutes for much of the game. It depends on the personnel. So if Kanter comes in, I want to see how Spoelstra counters that. If he brings in somebody else, or if he brings Bam back in on short rest, I don't know. But they've got to find a way, if from Miami's side. Kanter in the game is an opportunity to punish the Celtics. And if the Celtics can get away with it, then that's a win for them. Up next, Celtics went with their best five lineup, and it kind of worked. Why? Talk about that in a moment. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. In the seeding game, the best five lineup for the Boston Celtics of Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Marcus Smart got demolished by Miami. Bam Adebayo just destroyed them. Destroyed them. Now, the Celtics deployed it in short stretches, and this might be the key to using this lineup, short bursts, because it could be the Celtics version of Miami going zone or other teams going zone. You do it in short enough bursts Miami did it for a lot longer bursts, but generally speaking, you do it, the whole point of a zone is to do it in short enough bursts to throw you off, confuse you. The Celtics with their best five lineup in the first quarter did a great job. It wasn't quite as effective later on, I think partly because Gordon Hayward was gassed, a little tired. So that kind of takes away from what that lineup can do, because the key to that lineup really, honestly, is activity. They are switchable. They have to be on a string. They have to be active. They have to be playing super, super hard. And if there's any sort of fatigue, that has a real strong impact on the effectiveness on this. So why did it work? Why did it work in the first quarter when everybody was like, uh-oh, they're going with this, and Adebayo's in the game, and they just disrupted it? Well, Jaylen Brown's activity was really, really huge. He got his hands in on everything. In the first quarter, they stepped up against a lineup of Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, Goran Dragic, Bam Adebayo, Derrick Jones Jr. So in the first possession, they switched on a Bam Adebayo dribble handoff with Butler. Jaylen Brown got his hands in on that handoff, got it up to Jason Tatum, who got a dunk. The second time they did it, they switched again. Tyler Hero got a decent shot off. He missed, but Jaylen Brown leaked out and got a breakaway dunk. The third time, Jaylen Brown jumps in the passing lane, knowing that the Celtics are going to try again with some sort of Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler dribble handoff. He jumps the passing lane, anticipates it, and goes off into a breakaway. So the Celtics had Jaylen Brown on Bam Adebayo. So he was basically playing the five. They switched on those handoffs, which is the way you would want to defend those handoffs. And Jaylen's activity really disrupted that. So if they're going to continue to do those dribble handoffs and Jaylen Brown is defending, him switching onto Butler or whomever is running that with him, his ability to get in, get his hand on the ball, his defensive ability is going to be a big deal. I think that's why you have Jaylen Brown on Adebayo, because he's strong enough to handle Adebayo for, you know, a little bit anyway. And then if you're switching, he's good enough to slide over to the wings. I mean, he's a wing player, so he can switch on to Jimmy Butler. That's a great matchup for him. And on those handoffs, if you can be in there and disruptive, you have the opportunity to get a steal like he did. So that was very active. After that, Bam Adebayo came out. They brought in Iguodala. They actually got a good look after that, but Marcus Smart posted up Goran Dragic and scored. If the Celtics are looking at, I don't think the Celtics necessarily played Bam Adebayo off the floor. I think that was a decision that Spoelstra made because I think Adebayo was getting a little tired. And he just wasn't active. He wasn't playing. He just looked a little tired, to be honest. That's why Jaylen Brown was able to jump into that passing lane. But the Celtics do have opportunities to score, not just in transition, but on that Smart post up, there are weak spots depending on the personnel. And here you could attack Tyler Hero. You can attack Goran Dragic, which they did on that post up. I think if they're going to put that lineup out there against a lineup like this, even with Bam Adebayo out there, you're still attacking Tyler Hero. You're still trying to find ways. You can go small, pick and roll, and force them to make decisions. And I think if you're involving one of their weaker defenders in those small pick and rolls, you have an opportunity to really take advantage of a mismatch on offense or a poor decision, because you're playing with guys that can attack the rim very well. Every one of those guys can turn the corner on a dime and attack the rim very well. So if there's a hesitation by Hero or Dragic, the Celtics can quickly exploit that and get into the middle of the lane, and that paint touch opens up three-pointers, kickouts, layups, backdoor cuts. It opens up a lot. However, I think if Miami sees that again with Bam Adebayo again, my instinct is that they will immediately try to run that dribble handoff again, trying to bait the Celtics into switching again, but then have Bam Adebayo fake the handoff, turn around, and drive to the rim. And if the Celtics are spaced out, because what you do is you run that up around the elbow, you stick one guy in that left corner, one guy in that right corner, and Duncan Robinson on the right wing, and now there's nobody in the lane. Even if the Celtics are playing off their guys with a foot in the lane, as Adebayo turns the corner, that's going to be a hell of a race to get to that spot, first of all. And second of all, if somebody leaves, Adebayo's a good enough passer where he can find a guy out in the perimeter. So just something to watch for when game four rolls around on Wednesday. If the Celtics try this best five lineup again, I would immediately have a play, a variation, or something that you can call out that's specifically for Bam Adebayo to fake the handoff, which he does all the time anyway. If you watch the Miami Heat run that handoff, he'll keep it and drive it plenty. So I think part of why the Celtics were successful there, maybe part of that fatigue for Adebayo caused him to not recognize that, hey, I should probably fake this and drive it. But I would expect them to fake and drive that and have Adebayo just attack the rim that way. You know, maybe I wouldn't have Jones out there. Maybe I'd put Duncan Robinson out there, but that's such a crappy defensive lineup. Jones can, you know, stick him in the corner. He'd be the guy you help off of, but he can still bury the three. So that's my look at the best five. I think there are certainly opportunities. They had another lineup in there where Duncan Robinson was in there. And the Celtics were able to target him in isolation with those lineups. And it's also very important when they get those lineups to be active off the ball and make the defense kind of make decisions. Even if somebody's targeting somebody on isolation, the Celtics had a great possession where they hit Kemba Walker for a three in the fourth quarter with this lineup to make it 107-94. After a lot of very stagnant basketball. But after that, Gordon Hayward lost Bam Adebayo. He was probably supposed to switch. He was tired, and he definitely did a terrible job on that. But so I think there is some value to doing this. The Celtics just have to be aware of those things. They just have to be super, super active. They have to play on a string. They really, and when I say play on a string, they just have to, when one guy moves, everybody's going to be moving in concert with one another. It's really going to be on those off-ball defenders, those weak side defenders. If they're running a dribble handoff on the other side, just to be aware. And somebody, if it's Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum, the guy who's down low has to step over and come on over to be in position to take a charge. And the other guy who's up high then has to kind of play in between and read where Adebayo would be making that pass and get that closeout. That opens that up for a second pass. By then, you would hope somebody has rotated over to the guy on the baseline. That's a lot. That's asking a lot. But that's what's going to be necessary. I don't think this is going to be a lineup that they run out there in big doses. I think this is going to be a lineup that they do minute and a half, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes at a time, which is what we saw. End of quarter situations. I think end of quarter is great because if Bam Adebayo is tired, that's a great time to deploy it. I think you find a way where Bam is about to come out of the game. That's a great time to deploy it. So when the Celtics use it is as important as how the Celtics use it. Up next, an emotional plea to the Boston Celtics as they continue this playoff run. I also have an emotional plea to you to go to BuiltBar.com and try the best tasting protein bar I have ever had. It comes in amazing 18 amazing flavors. They've got 12 original flavors like simple raspberry or peanut butter or banana bread. They got something like carrot cake or cookies and cream. Now, these sound like kind of insane flavors for a protein bar, right? They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. It sounds like it's a candy bar, but they're great. They're low calorie. They're low sugar. They're high protein, high fiber. If you're on a keto diet, it's great for you. So if you're health conscious, looking to lose or maintain weight, it's perfect. I have the peanut butter Built Bars, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 net carbs. I throw it in there in my pack when I go over to the gym. I eat it once I'm done, when I'm done lifting. It's a great boost. It helps me supplement my workouts very, very nicely. Built Bar has reset their promo for this relaunch. So go to BuiltBar.com right now, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Even if you've used it in the last time, you can use it again. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at LOCKEDON Celtics on Instagram. I am recording this podcast after the Los Angeles Lakers and Denver Nuggets played an awesome game right down to the wire. Anthony Davis hits a buzzer beater. Just wild stuff. Jokic was amazing. Davis was amazing. PJ Dozier was amazing. Old Celtic friend PJ Dozier, who was on the Celtics G League team last year, was a two-way guy last year. And he's out there making an impact. Obviously, Jamal Murray, all of that. If you saw the game, you know what I'm talking about. It was an awesome game. But the Lakers won. They're up 2-0. We've seen the Denver Nuggets we've seen them come back from 3-1 before, so this series is not over. But the Lakers, I think, are not going to let this opportunity slip away. Celtics-Lakers in the finals is right there for us. It's right there. When I say this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for these Boston Celtics, I'm not exaggerating. This is not hyperbole. Because the Western Conference is difficult. LeBron James is getting older. You don't know when his drop-off is actually going to happen. I know, looking at how he plays, it's difficult to think that he's actually going to drop off, but everybody says it. Father Time is undefeated. Now, this is a much closer game with Father Time than he's used to, but LeBron's going to tail off at some point. And he wasn't good down the stretch. He needed Anthony Davis to finish this game off. This is the opportunity to not just face the Lakers, but to face LeBron, to go out there in a ridiculous season after the season that they had last year, to face LeBron James, to face the Lakers. And by the way, Sunday was Red Auerbach's birthday, so you're doing it right around Red's birthday. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the Boston Celtics. Now, they're not going to think of it like this. Brad Stevens certainly would never say anything like this, but we, on the outside, we get to think of things like this. And this is not a speech that I would even make to them. I'm not even going to write this right now. But the Celtics have an opportunity. Miami's not going to be easy to beat. You're already in a hole. It's hard to beat a team 4 times out of 5, but that's what the Celtics are going to have to do. And so obviously there's a massive task at hand, and they might not do it. But this opportunity may never, ever come again. This opportunity for a finals against the Lakers, a finals against LeBron, revenge against LeBron for a couple of years ago, after the whole Kyrie thing, so the first year that Kyrie is gone, to go and win a championship without him, all of these layers to this thing, there is so much that would make this one of the sweetest championships for Boston Celtics fans. You not only get to beat the Lakers, you get to beat LeBron on the Lakers. The Celtics would be underdogs. The Celtics would not be favored against LeBron and Anthony Davis. The Lakers would have the two best players in the series, not just the best player, the two best players in the series. Now, the Celtics would have the next 5 best players in the series, which would be interesting because it's very obviously LeBron and AD, or AD and LeBron. But the Celtics, how many Celtics do you start listing before you get to a Laker as the next best player in the series? Who is the third best Laker? Kuzma? Who would you even pick? So they would be underdogs. There were so many storylines here. After watching the Lakers win that game, and after hearing people say that the Lakers' path to a championship is right there. It's right there. It just brings this thought into my mind that if the Celtics can get past Miami, and again, that's a tall task, that's going to be difficult, and the percentages are right now that they're not going to, but obviously you win game four, then it's a best of three. It doesn't matter. You don't look at it as, oh, you got to win four out of five. You just win that next game. But point is, this is still difficult, and I'm sure as hell not dismissing what the Celtics have ahead of them. All I'm saying is, if they can find a way to get past Miami, and if they can find their way against the Lakers, if they can beat this LA team this year with everything that they've been through, it would be one of the sweetest championships the Celtics have ever won. And that's also because they would prevent the Lakers from catching them. I mean, we can forget the fact that a bunch of these championships didn't even come in Los Angeles. They came in Minneapolis. But regardless, the franchise, we don't want the Lakers catching the Celtics in championships. What better way to prevent that than by beating them yourselves? It's right there. It's right there. These Celtics got to find a way. They've got to find a way. I don't know how it's going to take something that they may not even realize that they have in them. But this would be one hell of a story. The way this is shaping up, now that the Clippers are gone, and now that the Lakers are up 2-0, I mean, that series certainly isn't over, but it's shaping up. Like, this is shaping up. It's there. It's there. There are plenty of storylines with the Lakers and the Heat, and I don't want to see those storylines. I want to see Celtics, Lakers, and all of those storylines. And if the Celtics can beat that Lakers team, what a celebration that would be. Plenty of work to be done, though. First step is on Wednesday. So I'll go back to my analytical side and one game at a time and all of that stuff. Definitely a couple more podcasts coming up before that game and the post-game podcast. So subscribe if you have not. I hope you enjoyed this show. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Subscribe wherever podcasts exist. You can follow on Spotify if you prefer to do that. Everybody who does listen on a regular basis, this is a Monday through Friday podcast. Thank you. Thank you for making the show part of your daily routine, taking the show wherever you go. I love you for it. I really appreciate it. Thank you for going to BuiltBar.com and using the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your next order. Thank you for sharing the podcast and telling everybody that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.